again, basketball gamers, and welcome to episode number 262 of the NLSC podcast. I'm Andrew, and it is launch weekend for NBA Live and NBA 2K. NBA Live 19 and NBA 2K19 both out this weekend, or at least the 20th anniversary edition for NBA 2K19. And we will have coverage of those games moving forward, of course, post-release, and we'll also have impressions for you starting with next week's podcast. This week, however, I am presenting my interview with Josh and Dave from Nemo Gamo. They are the masterminds behind Basketball Classics, a game we've talked about a few times before on the NLSC podcast. Recorded this interview a couple of weeks ago. It's overdue that we get it out to you, so that's what's going to be happening this week. We will have impressions of NBA Live 19 and NBA 2K19 for you on next week's podcast, and of course in the forum and articles in the meantime. But for now, please enjoy my interview with Josh and Dave. So we've been promising this for a while, and we've finally got around to sitting down and recording this interview. Today I'm joined by Nemo Gamo developers Josh and Dave. They have made a fantastic retro-themed basketball game that's available on Steam through Early Access. It is Basketball Classics. Josh, Dave, welcome to the NLSC podcast.
Thanks so much. Great to be here.
Thanks, Andrew. Thanks for having us.
So I've talked about Basketball Classics on the NLSC podcast before. I've given my take on it in my words, but in your words, you know, how would you describe Basketball Classics?
Let's see. I think in a few words, just kind of a phrase, it would be 5-on-5 pro basketball in a retro style. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for those that haven't seen it or even heard of it, it's kind of like we hope that it's a spiritual successor to like the 8-bit, 16-bit sports games. That there's just, you know, we've moved past that in a lot of ways, and we felt like this game, it just didn't exist, and we wished it had, and so we've kind of taken that retro take on basketball.
It very much does remind people of Double Dribble and Tecmo NBA Basketball, those classic games from back in the day. And it's, we were talking about it before we started recording, and I've said it on Twitter, and other people have said it as well, obviously. But it's the game that nobody knew they wanted, but now that it's out, people seem to be pretty enthused about it, and rightfully so, I feel.
Yeah, we're glad to hear that. It's been a long time coming. You know, I wanted this game to exist when I was 10 years old playing Tecmo Super Bowl on the NES, and I just thought, wow, I would love to play something like this, like a deep, stat-driven, fast-paced, but endlessly replayable kind of a sports game, team sports game, but in a basketball setting, and that just didn't exist at the time. And so for the last 25 years, I've been thinking about making this, and then I met up with Dave, and he was an artist, a lot of the same interests as me, and we thought, you know, let's give this a try.
So in a way, a quarter of the century in the making, really.
Yeah, it's kind of a it makes me feel old.
Oh, well, I'm an old man of 33, so I'm not going to pass any judgment at this stage. But obviously, it hasn't quite taken 25 years of programming. That's just the concept has been quite of a century in the making. But so when did you guys start working on the game?
Well, I would say was it February? Mm-hmm. I think it was around February. Yeah.
2016.
January, February 2016.
Yeah, 2.5 years.
Yeah. We, it actually came, it's kind of interesting, but it came about when I put on this annual Tecmo Super Bowl tournament. But before I get into that, though, have you played Tecmo Super Bowl? Like, are you a Tecmo Super Bowl guy?
No, I haven't played their football. I have played their NBA games.
Because played the NBA
ones, yeah. I've made a couple of NBA ones, yeah. Yeah, probably NFL is not really big in Australia. It is popular, but I've always been more of a basketball guy.
Yeah. For sure. Well, that's kind of what's interesting about Tecmo Super Bowl to me, is that I'm not into football, you know? I'm not into American football, and so But I love the game Tecmo Super Bowl.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah, so it really was kind of born from this, like, we love this style of game. You know, it's trying to bridge the gap between simulation and arcade. And, you know, they take out annoying realities, but keep in enough that it's not goofy, you know. And so you're like, man, basketball, you know, you talk about Tecmo NBA basketball. And as much as I was really excited for that game, and we poured a bunch of time into, like, the rosters and stats and stuff like that in that game, I feel like it didn't, it, just the gameplay itself, it was like it was just came out at the wrong time, you know.
Yep.
The NES hardware or whatever couldn't handle the more advanced mechanics.
No, I run a feature every week on the NLSC called Wayback Wednesday. I'm not sure if you've seen any of the games I've covered.
Oh, totally. Totally. Yeah. I love that about your show, by the way. Yeah.
But I've looked back at Double Dribble and various other old games, and they've all got their charm, but not all of them really hold up, especially the early ones. It's not really until maybe mid-90s NBA Live 95, being a really big jump from NBA Showdown with the NBA Live series. It's not really till then that they really start to get sophisticated enough. So I know exactly what you mean with those early mechanics, that they're fun, but it took a while for basketball to really be represented properly on the virtual hardwood compared to, say, American football or soccer.
Yeah, for sure. I'm a huge fan of Live 95. It doesn't get enough love, so thank you.
Yeah, definitely one of my favorites to this day.
Yeah, it's great, but yeah, it's hard to go back to anything really like pre-Live 95 or NBA Jam is really, like, the original NBA Jam is really about as far back as you can go and still have a fun, like, hard-to-stop-playing, you know, kind of experience.
Yeah, the arcade games hold up a little bit better because of they don't really have to worry about realism, or there's nothing really you don't really compare it as much to the real game, I suppose. Whereas that the 5-on-5, you really do have to, you do inevitably end up comparing it to later games and the real sport a bit more closely, and I guess to bring it back to basketball classics, that's you've tried to capture that with that modern technology. You know, you've got the play calling as you're running up the court, just a simplified play calling, and the modern mechanics with the shot meter and everything, which again is something I really love, and you know. I don't want this to be a mutual admiration society or anything, but I really am enjoying Basketball Classics out of the gate. As I said, very impressed for an early access game, and to see all those new mechanics. I mean, it's already surpassed games like Double Dribble just by being able to implement those modern mechanics.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
The play calling mechanic, you know, that's something that the first time I talked with Dave about the game, we said, you know, this is one thing that we want to really try and get right is the play calling. Some of the earlier basketball games, they tried to take a stab at the play calling, and it was always it was really clumsy, hard to tell what was going on, and we've really tried to focus. I hope that we've found a good spot. I hope that our fans are enjoying the play calling. But yeah, that was definitely one of the top priorities, was that we really focused on that aspect of it.
Sorry, go on.
Oh, I was just going to point out, as we're kind of talking about how it fits in with these old games, it seems like they couldn't even get down, you know, how to orient the court. You know, it's like every time a basketball game would come out, it was like starting from scratch. Mm. And they try to decide, you know, do we go horizontal or do we go, you know, left to right? Or if you go vertical, then how are we going to switch, you know, when you change possession? You know, you see kind of the difference between Dr. J and Larry Bird kind of stuff versus, you know, and Double Dribble, for example, you know, it's not really even 5-on-5 basketball.
Mm.
So it's like you kind of saw this evolution. It's really an interesting thing. But yeah, I think that hopefully we're able to put the new mechanics in that they just couldn't have done back in the day, but still keep that vibe.
Definitely. And speaking of the old games and the changing camera angles and everything, because that's a great point that, as you say, they're trying to figure it out as it went along, and perhaps why basketball games took a while to get going. But did you ever play a game called, I think, the North American version would be NCAA Basketball by HAL Software back on the Super Nintendo days? It was released in Australia as World League Basketball in other PAL regions because we couldn't have the college, can't have NCAA outside of the US. They don't have the rights to it. And in Japan, it was released as Super Dunk Shot with all these basically fictional NBA teams, the Chicago Bulls with Michael Jordan, and all this getting around trademarks that were, and such, and licensing that was incredible. But it used the Mode 7 3D capabilities of the Super Nintendo and was really quite advanced for its time.
I want to research this though. I've never heard about that.
I'll send along my Way Back Wednesday on it because it's amazing just seeing the Japanese version with the Boston Celeries and just all these joke names and I forget what they call the Jazz, but yeah, just basically they've changed some of the names around and put an extra letter in, or I think it's the New York Kicks Ewing with an E and just stuff like that. Like, you know, stuff that would never fly today, basically.
Yeah.
Wait, so this was here, it was released as NCAA
yep,
basketball?
NCAA basketball with most of the Division I teams. In PAL regions, it was World League Basketball, a fictional global league with teams from around the world, where they just basically changed the college teams to these fictional global teams. And yeah, they changed it to a knockoff NBA game in Japan, the Super Dunk Shot.
Nice. We're going to have to try and play this. That sounds pretty cool. And you're saying the mechanics hold up well today?
It actually does. The only thing that really... it's even got some rudimentary play calling. It's got this... It's Mode 7, so there's no crowd or anything, but you're in this big blue space, so there's no crowd, but you can hear them. But it's 3D, and the camera's very similar to some of the follow cams from the career modes of Live and 2K, the recent Live and 2K games. You can choose which dunk you want to do. There's pretty advanced shooting mechanics for the time. The only thing that's really missing is a sprint control, which was obviously missing from a lot of games back in the day. You couldn't sprint, so you'd get stuck on the CPU a lot.
Oh, yeah.
But it's definitely an interesting title, especially that the Japanese knockoff version is quite interesting. Totally. what they did.
Well, I'm glad that you're able to kind of pick out a game that you liked for the mechanics and not just, you know, for some license. Because I think, like, that era, holy cow, there was a bunch of crazy licensing going on, you know, like Barkley, Shut Up and Jam, or David Robinson's Supreme Court, or Pat Riley Basketball, you know, or
Bill Laimbeer Combat Basketball.
Oh, I reviewed yeah, that one Way Back Wednesday as well. I wasn't kind to it. It doesn't hold up.
Yeah.
It doesn't. That one doesn't hold up. But Michael Jordan, just to be fair, you know, because obviously being a Bulls fan, I'm not just going against the Pistons here. You know, Michael Jordan, Chaos in the Windy City, also problematic. You know, just no, and barely a basketball game to boot. It's a platformer too. So.
Yeah, so it was like they were cashing in on you know, any license kind of thing they could. Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to think who that announcer is. It's like that ESPN announcer, and he had his own game, talking basketball, all babies, basketball, something weird.
Yeah. Dick Vitale?
Of course, yes, that's it. It's Dick Vitale's. Yeah, yeah, he had his own game too. That's funny.
And you're right. It's something we don't see these days. It's really come down to just maybe three or four games a year. Now we have a couple of other people throwing the hat into the ring, yourselves included. But back in the day, there were just so many basketball games of varying quality and concepts, so to speak.
Oh man. Yeah, I'll say. And that's, I got to say that about your show, to be able to straddle, you know, these pretty awkward, a lot of awkward basketball games, and to still be so knowledgeable about Live and 2K and stuff. I think that's, you know, you're kind of one of a kind there.
Oh, thank you. It's called not having a life outside of basketball gaming. Many of the people in the community would agree. So we talk about the mechanics and the old stuff. So, you know, broad question, obviously, but how difficult is it to make a basketball game? Because, you know, people, we play Live and 2K, the latest games. We've been doing it for years, covering them for years, and everyone seems to think they could do a better job than the guys at Take-Two or EA. You know, you guys have actually had experience programming a game, the AI, having players move around, play calling, that kind of thing. You know, how difficult is it, really?
Well, if you can make a game better than 2K and Live, get in touch with us. We'll hire you. it's tough. I mean, making any game is tough. The fact that any game gets made really is a miracle. It takes so much time, so much dedication. And then, I mean, the idea is, with these long-running franchises, they all have their knowledgeable fans who have been with them, you know, for over a decade, you know, two decades even in Live's case. And but so everyone kind of feels some like ownership in the franchise, and they feel like they know how it should really be, you know. I know I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
Well, everyone thinks it's as simple as typing in something into Notepad and saving it as an .exe file. I think some people don't really know how programming works. And
it's tough. It's tough. It takes a long time, a lot of work. I mean, those AAA basketball games, they really are, they're works of art. They're technical wonders. Hmm. It's pretty amazing.
But there is something to, you know, almost like the slider idea, that you just say how certain stats are going to affect certain things that they tweak each year, and it's not necessarily starting from scratch, though, right?
Of course, yeah. Just, I know with 2K, sometimes they look at people's slider adjustments in the previous games and then make that the default setting if that people like the sliders. I know that's happened before in 2K, which I think is great, you know, that looking at that fan feedback. And again, obviously, you guys have now got that with a game out there on Early Access. People have been able to give you feedback and tweak the game from there.
Yeah, definitely. The fan feedback is awesome. We love it. Keep it coming. It's, you know, I mean, there's only two of us, and we play the game every day, but, I mean, that's still only a couple hours of, you know, a couple man hours that are going into it from our end. But out there in the community, you know, there can be hundreds of man hours every day of people playing the game, which is amazing. And so, I mean, there's a lot of knowledge out there, even, you know, about our game, a lot of knowledge and insight and testing, you know, that we couldn't get on our own. It's pretty amazing.
And it does seem people have really taken to the game, which has been very encouraging to see.
Totally, yeah. We're building a community around the game, and people like it. People like where it's headed. They understand the vision for it, and they seem to be on board. And that's really exciting, you know. After having this thing in our heads for so long, it's cool to have it out there and to have people be receptive and into it.
Yeah, I'd also like to point out, like, seeing the game being played on YouTube is surreal to me. Like, I absolutely love it. I mean, it's not like there's a million YouTube videos. There's just the few that I've seen, and it's just so fun. And there's been a couple where people are actually like adding their own commentary, and they're picking up on these references, you know, that we're kind of, you know, parodies and whatever we're doing in our game. That I can't believe it. It's like they pick up on every single little addition that I made graphically, and they're super smart about how it's been programmed and taking things apart. I mean, it's incredible.
the story mode, because at the moment we have the exhibition play and we have the story mode. I do enjoy that. You know, the whole intro of the story mode does take me back to the 8-bit era. Even the sound effects you've got with the floating Julius Erving head talking is just so delightfully retro, basically, with that. And then the Mega Man 2 part of the intro as well. You know, I enjoy that. It's already a better story than 2K's My Career. regular listeners to the NLC podcast will know my feelings about the story-driven approach to that. But this is a good story-driven approach. You know, it's not, even the whole taking on the players like Mega Man bosses. It's really. I saw that. That's really cool that you've done that with this. All these references that do. You know, it's not just a tribute to Double Dribble and all those games, but all those classic games we grew up with.
For sure, yeah. Mega Man 2, Ninja Gaiden. I mean, it's all there. I mean, they were the things that we grew up with and loved, and that we still like to revisit. So it's been a lot of fun to kind of, you know, put our own spin on a lot of those classic games and incorporate them into this. It's really been a blast. It's been amazing.
Yeah.
So, what other additions can we expect? What else is in the pipeline? I know you've talked about things on social media, in the release notes on Steam, but you know, this is the NLC podcast, so by all means, please give us a scoop.
Oh, yeah. Well, honestly, I think the biggest shocker to us was how many people are looking for single player content. You know what I mean? Like that. I guess it's just because we're making it together. When we think about it, we're thinking about local multiplayer. But when it comes down to it, it's like the statistics are telling, the analytics are telling us that, you know, 90% of people are just playing it on their own, which means we need to make a bunch of single player content. So we're definitely focusing on that at this point. You know, we want to make sure that our mechanics are sound and whatnot, but we're definitely focusing on that moving down the line. We've read a lot of your articles, honestly, about like season modes and tournament modes and you know, playoff modes and
yep.
We've had a lot of discussion about it, and honestly, you tell us, Andrew, you tell us, what do you think would be the single most impactful mode? You know, like what should be the first mode, first single player mode to go into this?
I honestly would probably say season, because that's one thing that a lot of the games that you're paying tribute to didn't really have, or they had a very cut down version of it. If you go back to Lakers versus Celtics, they basically just had half the playoffs. Double Dribble had exhibition play, one and two player, of course, but having that, you know, a season mode of type of a kind that can even track stats and things like that, I think would be amazing in this aesthetic.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's definitely the direction we're starting. But even with that, how would you like to see a season mode go? Because we definitely have our ideas of, you know, how many games should be played. Do you play all 16 teams? Do you start from 8, you know, and move your way up? Or do you play cross conference? Should there be playoffs at the end, you know?
Oh, definitely. Definitely playoffs at the end. I think going back to some of the early, maybe NBA Live games at least, and you can do it in current games as well, but the idea of being able to play just either the teams in your own conference, both conferences, play everyone once, play everyone twice, just basically a couple of different options if people want that lengthier season, and then in the playoffs. I don't think multi-season play and the whole My League franchise approach is probably necessary for the aesthetic. I mean, if you could find a way to do it, it would be mind-blowing, obviously, but at the same, you know, especially with, again, having it in that retro theme. But I think having that that season mode where you've got, have a few different options of what you play, how many times you play other teams, and ending up in the whether you want that abbreviated season, whether you want to take your chance simming a game, even if you have this, if they have the longer season, and then ending in the playoff tournament, or jumping straight into a playoff tournament if you like, I think that would be really great for the single player modes, because, you know, we see a lot of people saying single player is dead. That's the whole controversial thing in gaming these days, and being a Fallout fan, obviously, with that going, the new Fallout 76 that's coming out being my obligatory Fallout reference for an NLC podcast here. with that being multiplayer, that's obviously very controversial, but then people warming up to that as well. Even with the basketball games, people are saying, oh, well, what's happened to the traditional experience of just the season mode or the franchise mode, especially with it all being about the online connected experiences and the career mode? To have it bring it back to a traditional experience, I think, is really part of the charm, and it would be quite special.
Yeah, agreed. We're about halfway there on the season mode, and
there you go.
it's been a lot of fun to work on, and you know, we were shocked, honestly, when we first launched the game, and we asked the community, like, okay, what would you like to see, like online multiplayer, season mode. And I mean, they just blew up. Like, it has to be season mode. Like, we definitely want season mode. Like, I was surprised personally how many people came out and said, I don't even care about online multiplayer. Don't even waste your time on that. We want season mode. And so I don't know if that's just something about the retro aesthetic, you know, appealing to maybe, you know, gamers in their 30s like us who didn't necessarily grow up with the online components in their games, and so they're just not used to that. I honestly don't know, because we know...
I think it is a bit of that, actually. Just the
yeah.
Feeling that throwback and, you know, like you say, the local multiplayer being a big thing as well, because we all remember playing, sitting on the couch or in front of the computer with a friend. And, you know, back... I can't say I'm no longer an online gamer because I've played too much 2K Pro-Am in the past few years to say that. But at the same time, knowing... You know, and I hate to be a grumpy old man about it, but there is something about either local multiplayer or single player, because unfortunately some people don't play nice online, you know, and you experience sometimes the worst of humanity on the internet, you know, not to get on my soapbox.
That's true.
And you're relying, the experience relies so much on the quality of the opponents, the sportsmanship of the opponents, all that stuff. Whereas with the single player experience or local multiplayer, because back in the day, you know, you couldn't be that kid who was a jerk because one, you were in striking distance on the couch. And two, you know, you were the kid who didn't get invited back, so you had to play nice. Whereas online, not so much.
Absolutely, totally agree. I've kind of given up on online games myself. At least once with online chat, that's kind of really where you see the worst of it, right?
Maybe you could implement it so with the online chat, it gets changed to that 8-bit sound effect that Julius Erving's head is making. That's
right. I could go for that.
So I think that's what a lot of people, when they're trash talking online, sound like. That those old bleeps and bloops. That's all they should be hearing.
That's funny. Yeah.
So since you've got the shooting mechanics in there, the shot meter, of course, which I like, because jump shots back in the day were they're tough in old games. Basically, it's the dice roll. You got very little control over it, and it always feels like the CPU can just make jump shots and. You know, you feel like you always have to go in for a dunk or something because the game's just always going to screw you over in those old games.
Yeah, when you're thinking about jump shots, which games do you mean? Like N64 stuff, or even before that?
Oh, even before that. I mean, traditionally I've not been a great 3-point shooter in basketball games until kind of the current generation when we've had the shot meter. And it's just. Maybe I try them at inopportune times. Maybe I'm too far behind the 3-point line because I want to make sure they're there. Because in some of the early games, if even the player indicator was over the 3-point line, it counted as a 2. Like the player's feet is behind the line, but the player. Some games there was a bug with the indicator being over the line counted as a 2. Yeah, so it's
yeah. Totally.
So sometimes I need a score. I'm just going inside. I'm going to dunk. I'm just going to shake it inside. Yeah, yeah. I'm going to, you know, I want to play realistically. But if you're going to play this way, game, I'm just going to dunk on your face. You know this.
Yeah, the shot meter. There's a whole bunch of things that like the modern games have that we are like, you know, if you can add a shot meter and you can add these little symbols to quickly identify, you know, strengths or weaknesses of your players. That's stuff that literally would have been impossible on you know, Super Nintendo or something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, playing the new games now, people are like, you know, they're like wizards and they're looking at all these different indicators to decide what to do. And but yeah, the jump shot is the biggest deal there, to just have like a bar that gets a rhythm going instead of just trying to guess if you're at the top of your jump.
Yep.
You know, and so having that shot meter was kind of a big deal. I think that was all Josh, by the way. I think that was Josh's idea. But Josh, right?
Right. Yeah, no, it's fun. There's a lot of things it's funny. It's interesting in doing like a modern retro game. There are so many things that people have come to expect from modern games that, like, if you like go true retro with your game, people can get annoyed with it. I mean, they can get frustrated that it doesn't have the modern feel or, you know, just some of the niceties that we become accustomed to in more recent games. And so, yeah, the shot meter was just kind of one of those. It's like people have just, it's become a necessity now. And to go back to not having it would just be a little too brutal.
A little too retro, you know, bringing... And I think that obviously is an important thing with making a retro-themed game or a remake of a game, is that you don't replicate the good parts that we have nostalgia for, but they're not the parts that you don't like. You know, you look back at some of the old games back in the day, the platformers. I compare a game like Super Mario Bros. 3, a classic, to Bart versus the Space Mutants, which I have nostalgia for that game, but I cannot defend its controls. When run and jump are the same button, you know, things like that. There are some things that belong in the past, basically.
Right. Well, and one of the funny things is, you know, people want the game to be like they want it to be the way they remember the old games. They don't want it to actually be the way the old games were.
Yeah.
Are the way that our memory kind of colors those experiences. So you kind of try and aim for that. So it's more like going for the feel of it instead of an actual replica of the retro games.
I thought that was a big issue, actually, when EA Sports got the Jam license and they made the 2010 NBA Jam. I thought it was a very faithful recreation of the original in many concepts, but unfortunately it also copied some of the things that were outdated with the comeback logic, very brutal rubber band AI, and things like that. And they really improved on it on Fire Edition, which I think is still one of the best arcade basketball games we've seen. But it was that situation where people said, oh, this is terrible and this isn't good, partly because people don't like EA Sports. That was a big thing with some of it. But at the same time, people were criticizing certain things about the game, and I was saying, you realize that this was in the original game too. That's how it was. You know, that's how the original NBA Jam was. So they've replicated that. So they've, but then they updated that a bit for On Fire Edition. So it's, yeah, I totally agree that it goes for the feel, the general feel and the aesthetic and certain concepts, but sort of trimming away the fat of the Bart versus the Space Mutants, basically, and its ilk.
No, I'd sing the praises of NBA Jam, the new NBA Jam, EA's NBA Jam, all day. I think it's fantastic. What kinds of mechanics are you talking about? Like, you're saying the rubber banding people?
Yeah, very much the rubber band AI, but they introduced the real AI from Fight Night in On Fire Edition, which was a bit smarter, a little bit less, the CPU is going to decide it's going to win now, which was very much, because, you know, I mean, the old days, of course, it's about getting quarters in the machine, isn't it? Getting the
money
in the machine.
Yeah.
So it was kind of replicating those mechanics on a system where you, well, I mean, these days we do put a lot of quarters into our machines, don't we, through DLC and pre-order bonuses and everything else, but not so much in the literal sense, I guess. But that kind of stuff there, and some of the way the players came towards the screen and zoomed in and out and things, and people remembered it differently. As you said, that people remember the games a certain way, but then they either forget about the drawbacks that we just kind of put up with back in the day, or they've kind of forgot. They think they know how it is, but it's been 20 years since they played the game, so they've forgotten exactly how some of it works.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, and yeah, I don't want to go off on a tangent or anything, but we have kind of had these discussions about, you know, what's the higher art form? Is Rick like recreating something so it is literally could have been made back then? Like if we could put Basketball Classics on a Super Nintendo cartridge and actually play it in the system, or, you know, we of course have chosen to try to just be like, try to be as authentic as we can, but still, you know, like two button gameplay, I think, was one thing we wanted to try. At the beginning, we tried to do two button gameplay.
Oh, yep.
Yeah, and it's like, well, no, it clearly needs a third button. So, yeah, there's been stuff like that. We've had to go back and forth between, like, are we going to go, how retro are we going to be with this?
Well, one thing I noticed along that lines, because I do agree that having that extra button is good, I kind of like that you've not had the sprint control as well, because again, that's very authentic to the time, and you don't really need it with the way it works. It's much like double dribble in that respect. But one design choice you made is having pass and steal the same button, whereas usually it's pass and switch. But a lot of games back in the day did have pass and steal on the same button, so it's an interesting throwback to that. I was kind of messing around with the buttons when I first started, because I'm one of these people that just dives into a game and doesn't look at the control screen and then complains that the controls aren't working.
You're not alone.
who read the manual? I kind of like that as well, the whole throwback to an old style of controls that with pass and steal on the same button and switch on a third button, whereas, you know, back in the day that happened a lot, and it was only certain games that really popularized the switch and pass on the same button. I guess a lot of the sim games like Live, that it actually became standard. I think even from memory, Kobe Bryant at NBA Courtside on the Nintendo 64 had the same thing where steal switch wasn't pass, so it was still, even as far as the late 90s, that concept was still being used.
Yeah, I'm glad you noticed that. That's interesting.
Like I said, no Live outside basketball gaming. So,
right? Yeah. I mean, did it throw you? Like, did it take you a while to adjust?
It did because I'm NBA Live. And I still, when I played, I still try to switch on steel. And okay, that's right. It's the other button as well. So I've got to go back and forth with it. But it's again one of those things that's really delightfully retro.
Well, thank you. Maybe that's the kind of thing that we, you know, we could definitely add a setting for people who would prefer to toggle the way that works. But growing up on the old ballers, I liked the way that the control scheme that we settled on.
Yeah, the turbo, the idea of having a separate turbo button has been one of the most controversial topics for us in the making of this game. I really thought that might be one thing that on early access it would just be this resounding, where's the freaking turbo button? but really, people have gotten it, because there's so many ways that speed changes in the game, that you know, it's like Tecmo in the sense that you got to figure out other ways to get your speed right.
Yeah, and so a big part of our decision there was derived from the play calling. You know, we wanted to give the player like natural ways to get open by calling picks, you know, by having the teammates running their own screens on their own, you know, giving you the option to call a play, call a timeout, and set up a formation, you know, that you want to try and find those openings, and or with rubbing off your defender onto your teammates, and so we liked the idea of approaching it that way instead of, well, let's just give them a button that they can run really fast.
Yeah, and you know, some old games you do miss having a turbo when you go back to them, but other games do seem to work okay with it when it has that variable speed. I imagine that wasn't. I imagine that was a bit of a challenge to get right as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, just countless hours of playing and testing and trying new things. Okay, is this fun? No. Okay, let's try it again. Is it fun now? Is that better or is that worse? You know, and just, yeah, I mean, we've tried everything under the sun and just endlessly tweaked, just with the main objective being, you know, is this fun?
Well, and speed itself is like the defining attribute, right? I mean, the best player on the game is this shooting guard from Chicago that is bald.
Oh, Vicky Jason. Yes, I'm familiar with him. I'm a big fan of him and roster player back in the 90s. You know, it's...
Anyway, like, and his defining characteristic, he's the fastest one, and he happens to be super fast on both, you know, offense and defense. Anyway, if you just have a turbo button, it's like, you know, the old NBA Jam. We all love it, but the fact that Jeff Hornacek can dunk it, you know, can like flip around in the air and dunk it and catch up to, well, I guess Michael Jordan wasn't on it, was it? It had to
no,
be like...
that's only the some rare versions that apparently the cabinet still exists somewhere, but yeah.
But yeah, like you'd stay toe-to-toe with them, and you know, that was something that like we really weren't willing to compromise. We didn't want every player to be the same, you know? We really wanted to have attribute-rich stuff, and anyway...
And I do like the approach you've taken with all the... Because you've got a host of teams in the game, as of the latest update, up to 2018 as well, with the 2018 playoffs. It's you kind of have gone the super dunk shot route, perhaps not as blatantly as how software did. But yeah, I like that approach too, and you've got the player avatars and everything. It's again, it's I think a really cool way of handling it, and obviously you don't have the NBA breathing down your back either on the on what to implement in the game, so it's... I guess you've got more creative freedom that way as well.
Yes. Yeah, totally. yeah, I will say this one thing. I don't know if you ever saw this game. It was like Draymond Green's karate basketball or something like that. Did you ever see that?
I haven't seen that one, no. That's.
Oh, okay. I think it was like some online game. Anyway, I remember it coming out and I was like, what the heck? Like, I'm sure they didn't get Draymond Green to agree to kicking people in the nuts and, you know, going down the court. Anyway, if you go and look at their site, they talk about how quickly that got...
got shut down, yeah.
I got shut down super fast. So it's not like, we're doing everything we can to stay totally past the line.
Of course, yeah.
Above board, like there's no names or even faces and stuff like that. So,
and it's but I do like the big selection of teams because again, you go back to some of those old games, Lakers versus Celtics, and the player NBA playoff series. You had what eight teams? Sorry, and was it eight teams in the game or 16 teams in the game?
No, I think it was eight. I think it was eight. Yeah,
that's right. Eight teams in the game, and then of course NBA Showdown went up to the full 27 at the time. There's what I think four teams in double dribble that you can get, or maybe five or six in the arcade version. I did the NES version for Way Back Wednesday. So it's again to have all these different teams from going back through the years. It was again all part of the nostalgia for me to go back and see all that. Of course, I had to go back and play the games from the 98 season. You know, 20 years since the last championship. Yeah. Of course, the 99. And of course you've also got the. Even the numbers you've changed as well. It has that throwback to the 80s and everything, which it's the little details like that, which I think are pretty cool.
No, well, thank you. Yeah, that was, it's such a blast. It's such a blast for me to like, because I'm a huge NBA fan, and so coming up with like ways to get, you know, how do you represent different abilities virtually? It's really, really fun. And then to kind of go back through NBA stats and see how those could maybe translate into attributes. Yeah.
So I remember back in the day, because I've been making the patches mods for basketball games for, again, about 20 years now, since I discovered the NLSC. I'm not the founder of the NLSC. I've been running it for 17 of the 22 years that it's been around, which, again, makes me feel old. But I've been doing that for years. I remember making roster patches using magazines and trading cards for information. And now, no way.
You did?
Absolutely. And you know, old almanacs and all that kind of thing. And now we've just got basketballreference.com, which is just, you know, you've got all these resources to make a roster update these days, retro or current. Yes, there's just so many resources now.
So that was the funny thing about these old games. Like, that was so cool of how Tecmo Super Bowl ends up with these inhuman, like Bo Jackson, you know, these two Japanese guys are looking into newspapers and trying to find recordings of American football games. And they just the way they try to translate that is awesome. But, and then NBA Jam was the same thing. Like, they had to go through newspapers and, yeah, super clunky to try to come up with their attributes. So you were doing that yourself.
In the unofficial capacity, yeah, for all our roster mods and things, yeah. So I remember making a 1996 mod for NBA Live 2004, and even then that was pre-basketball reference. So I was referring to all these old almanacs and trading cards and everything. And I actually went back earlier this year and did a new version of that, using all the information from basketball reference, and actually made it a bit more accurate, I guess, with ratings or even some transactions and extra players that had been missing from the previous roster. It's just amazing what we've got to work with now, whether it's development or modding, I guess.
Yeah, totally. That's awesome. That's cool. You've been doing that a long time. It's, yeah, that was one of the funnest parts of this whole project, honestly, was just looking at the stats and reinterpreting those into, you know, 10 or 12 player attributes. How many did we
see? No, there's eight. There's eight attributes.
Okay, well, yeah, there are some that are unused in the code there at the moment, but yeah, that's been a blast.
And I saw that you had posted that Jordan hoops card on Instagram.
Oh yes, yeah.
Oh man, we, you know, those hoops. Oh, yeah. We both, of course, collected the entire series of that 1990-91 hoop set.
I've got some unopened packs from that season in my cupboard that I got them off eBay a couple of years ago, and I'm going to sit down one rainy day, I think, and just open them and have a nostalgic session. But I haven't been able to bring myself to tear them open yet.
Oh my gosh! I saw those packs. Yeah, you had those packs listed. I've seen some of those packs at antique short stores. I bought a bunch. They were like the USA Dream Team. It was like Dream Team 2 packs. And I was just a sucker for them, so I bought a whole bunch of them. They were, you know.
Oh, absolutely. You can't go past them, basically, if you grew up with them. I think that's why I've gotten into some of the, like, My Team and Ultimate Team as well, because it's that same feeling of opening packs and getting the cards, although you can actually do something with them now, I suppose. Because that was the whole thing back in the day. These are going to be worth a fortune in the future. Well, I still have all my basketball cards, so people can draw their own conclusion from that. So.
Yeah, I remember thinking, I'm going to fund my way through college with these basketball cards that I'm buying as an 8-year-old.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah.
So now you guys are still, and we've talked about mechanics in basketball classics and things that are being added, obviously the season mode coming, other things. The other thing I'd throw out there, since you've got the shot meter, is a 3-point shootout. If you could ever figure out a way to do that, that would be amazing as an exhibition mode.
Yeah, that's been something I've wanted since day one, for sure. But we'll put it in there.
Obviously, you're still putting the gameplay mechanics in. There's the new chase down system. There's the new dunk system, which is expanded on the original, because when it went at launch, basically you just have to tap the button, and it was a mash game to get the dunk, but now you've expanded on that a little bit.
Yes, and this is your chance, Andrew. This is your chance to we want to hear how to fix this, because literally, like, we put in these changes, you know, and yep. and because there's just two of us, sometimes they don't get fully tested out. And so I tried playing a 12-minute quarter game against the Phantom 5 with the new system, realizing that the chase down, the tweaks we made with the chase down dunk was nearly impossible. So that was something we had to quickly patch.
Yep.
But no, we want to hear. Well, I'll let Josh explain them. But we want to hear your real opinion. You know.
Well, so yeah, I mean, we thought that it would be fun to incorporate some kind of an interactive dunk system like we've never seen before in a game that really like would allow the player to move in the dunk, kind of build a dunk on the fly. Right. And we thought, OK, well, how do we incorporate the blocker into that? OK, well, if they try and like line up horizontally with the dunker. And then we ended up incorporating this moves system where the higher your dunk rating is, you get more moves. You can do like 10 moves if you have a 99 dunker. Whereas, you know, your standard blocker, like most of them are around like a 30 to 50 rating, and they might only have like 3 moves. So you can really outmaneuver the blocker while at the same time like creating this fun interactive dunk. But yeah, give us your review.
I mean, I've sent you some feedback. I feel bad about that. I was a bit harsh because I was kind of I was caught off guard by it, which I think was part of my problem with it. I had read about there being a new system. Conceptually, you know, I think it is a fun idea because, again, trying to move it up, and it's kind of crazy that you can do this 720 double pump reverse, you know, 547 double pump twisting around and such.
As Greg Ostertag.
No, as that blonde center from Utah in 1998. Yes. Yes.
Of course, you know.
A 1080.
The great Greg Foster.
Ostertag, that's what I said.
Yeah. No. There was Ostertag and Greg Foster, I think, was the two-headed monster taking on taking on Long Luke. Longley and
my head.
And Bill Wennington, no. Yeah. Of course, wow. I know the rotations for that. Again, no life. so, I mean, I think the system has merit, especially when you explain it like that, and you can see the different moves you can make. My big problem was it felt like the defender tracked it a little bit too easily. So I found I was making about one dunk in 20 attempts, which again could simply reflect on my skills on the sticks. It did feel a little bit like it was a bit overpowered for the blocker. In some respects, I think I had Hornacek block a Jordan dunk, a Utah shooting guard block a Mickey Jansen dunk a couple of times. My feeling is that needs to be turned down a little bit as far as that goes, that situation. I've sent this feedback to you as well, obviously, whether the mini game only triggers in certain situations, whether it's a high block rating or whether there's some kind of mix up with the with the different, whether it's sometimes it's a mash or sometimes it's the going against the blocker in that kind of mini game. Kind of a little bit like how there's different submission systems in the WWE 2K games for the submission holds. The different holds have different mini games on that. I mean, obviously, it's something that, you know, we were talking about it. You don't want to make it too confusing that it's throwing it at each time. And I do like that the chase down system is just the simplified mash. You know, I think that's a good way of doing that. I think it's a matter of refining that system or when it shows up, because I think a big appeal of the games like that, much like it was in Double Dribble, is to trigger the cutscenes and see the dunks, basically. And I think if users are getting blocked a little bit too often, as I was, it can kind of take away from that enjoyment because you're saying, oh, you know, the dunk should be easy. You know, and, you know, when I'm going up against a defender that's not necessarily as good, and probably more people get dunked on than dunks get sent back in the NBA. But if it was, depending on the moves, whether it was a block or maybe a rim stuff, if that was possible at all, I think there's potential in the system. It's just a matter of getting that right balance to make sure that it's not that people aren't getting blocked or missing the dunk too often or something like that. But you know, it is very satisfying when you can throw down some ridiculous 720 degree windmill tomahawk backwards up and down, reverse. You know,
heck yeah, for sure. So I mean, we have already addressed in the game a lot of the feedback that you had given us, so we appreciate it. We're always open to constructive criticism, and I feel like the game's, you know, constantly getting better because of it. So, the new dunk, it was a lot of fun to do. It was really it was a lot of work, a lot of new art assets, a lot of new programming had to go into that. But we think once we get it really fine-tuned and tweaked, we think it'll be a huge addition to the game.
Yeah, and other people do seem to be enjoying it, so I could just be terrible, is the other takeaway that we can take away from this. But
no, you were saying that, like, the computer follows you. You know, that's one thing that this Josh is saying, that contemporary games are they're masterpieces. To see what they've done with AI, that they don't feel like they're computers anymore.
Yep.
So if they're just following you and it's super close as you change, you know, from top to middle to bottom, then it's you know, that's not what we want. We don't want it to seem cheap or like they just move right with you, because that's not how it is when you play against another human.
Yeah,
that's been one of the fascinating things from a programmer's perspective in making the game. It's just addressing the AI, like, how do you teach the game to play itself, or how do you teach the game to play a game of basketball? And you know, it's super easy to write AI that could just completely destroy you, like keep you scoreless. It's harder to write AI, like, well, so that's how the game originally was. And then it's like we had to add, like, human imperfections. Like, okay, how do we make it so that if you stop and juke, like, it actually takes the computer a second to catch up with what you're doing, you know, to make it feel more human and also allow you to create those openings for the shot and stuff. All of that has been really fascinating to me.
I mean, it goes back to what I was brought up earlier in the interview, is that a lot of us don't realize what goes into it, into developing it. And you mentioned making all those art assets just to have that mini game in place.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, obviously appreciate all of that system and all the work that goes into that. And again, capturing that aesthetic of Double Dribble, which I think they just basically maybe have rotoscoped some Spud Webb and Dominic Wilkins to get those cutscenes looking
right
back at it. The fact that you guys have actually programmed, you know, a proper dunk animation is very commendable, because it's not just rotoscoped someone's actual footage. So it's obviously about getting that fine tuning, and I've seen it in the forums, the Steam forums, the discussion area for Basketball Classics, people who want CPU versus CPU, because there's still people who like to watch the CPU play itself. It's which I've never really gotten into myself, but to each their own.
Yeah, that was interesting to me. I didn't expect that, but I mean, it already works in the game, so heck, like, why not? I mean, I can polish it up eventually and put it in the game, but I think it, like, in that situation, it was where he was thinking, like, okay, if I'm playing it in a season mode and I get eliminated, like, I still want to be able to see how the rest of the season progresses and watch the finals, you know, championship game, which
that,
is cool, I guess.
That is a cool idea, actually, especially depending on way if it's a game over or whatnot. Speaking of game overs and new game plus and everything, any plans for the story mode and to expand on that? Hopefully not introducing a character like B-Fresh from 2K18. I'll never get tired of taking shots of B-Fresh. I don't know what they were. Do not know what they were thinking of with that character.
Oh man, yeah.
And there are people who used to work for the NLSC who are on the, you know, I do comes off as disrespectful to them. And we've got people on who used to work for us who are now working at Visual Concepts and obviously doing fantastic work on my league and everything else. But when it comes to Korea, I don't know what they were thinking with some of the characters last year.
Yeah. So, like, New Game Plus is something that I've wanted ever since we introduced the story mode. I think one reason we put that to the side is that, you know, we did get, like, a lot of criticism that the game was too difficult. And so I was like, well, okay, tacking on, like, additional difficulty after finally beating the Phantom Five was a little off-putting to some people. But as we've toned it down, like I would love to bring that idea back of the New Game Plus. We also have ideas for a second story that we would love to implement. A lot of that code is already in the game. But yeah, it's so time consuming. Like that just those cutscenes from the story mode. I mean, that's months of work, and so it's like it's hard to justify doing that at any point in the near future. Taking months away from working on something maybe that could be more substantial, like a season mode, just to add another story.
But if we were. If we were to pick another five players that, let's say, were from the 1998 season on, who would you choose, Andrew? Who's your center?
Well, of course, Marty Conlon has to be my go-to guy, my reference for 90s. I mean, I would have to say Shaq, probably, from 98 onwards would have to be my center.
Note taken. Who would be your power forward?
Tim Duncan.
Really? Okay. What year?
2003.
The 2003 Tim Duncan.
When he almost had the quadruple double in the.
Oh my gosh!
In the championship clinching game.
Okay. Because if I were to say, you know, Kevin Garnett, would it become a big argument?
I mean, that was the debate that year to year, you know, which was the better player, and
that's true.
And I do love KG; he's one of my favorite non-Bulls. So, you know, I kind of go with Duncan because of the rings and some of the statistical, you know, what he was doing at the time and everything, but. You know, I mean, if it was KG, I couldn't argue against that. I would not be disappointed, basically.
Yeah.
Or you could call him a small forward and put them both in there. That'd be a hell of a lineup.
Yeah.
Well, we had a thread way back in the day, infamously, when somebody who was playing an NBA Live 2001 franchise game with the title, I Cannot Believe My Starting Five, and they tried to insist that the natural position of Kevin Garnett was a point guard because they were playing him at point guard in their franchise. And it would turn into one of our biggest threads in our original forum, over 1,000 posts. Like, it just went completely off topic after a while because the guy got sick of being told, no, he's not a point guard, and, oh, you guys are taking it too seriously, took his ball and went home. And the thread just turned into this ridiculous 1,000-post, you know, daily thing we'd all post in. But
oh, my gosh. But
I've always wanted to do some kind of roster mod where Kevin Garnett is a point guard with on the team with his other players that he had, just for the stupidity of it.
Goodness.
But yeah, KG versus Duncan, that is a tough one for powerful. They're both, you know, it's contentious, and I couldn't go against either of them. That either way would be a worthy choice.
Yeah. Okay, and then your small forward.
Small forward. Ooh.
Now that this is going to be tough, especially, oh man, because if you're saying 98 till now and you're trying to pick a small forward,
I mean, I suppose if it's till now, I kind of have to default to LeBron, but if it's early 2000s, sort of 98 to early 2000s, could possibly go with McGrady if you want to call him a small forward. A swingman, because my next pick for shooting guard would be Kobe. So that's if you wanted to put the two of them in there as the wing players. But possibly T-Mac. I can't think of who else. I mean, there's surely other names coming to mind, but he's the first one that popped in.
Okay, so you'd go LeBron, you'd go Kobe, and then at point guard.
Point guard, I'm going to go Nash. I'll go Steve Nash.
Okay. Well, without divulging too much, that's a little bit different than the superstars team that I had kind of envisioned. But that is a fantastic team. You get Steve Nash, you get Tim Duncan in there. That's Wait, what year of Nash though?
See, it's funny because he won the two MVPs, and then the third year that he didn't win was probably better than the previous two combined, with some of his, statistically anyway. I'll say the second MVP year, because the two MVP years, like 2006, 2007?
Yeah, wait, what? No, that was 2000 and...
Because he won 2005 and 2006, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so.
So I'll say 2006.
Okay. Nice. So even over Steph Curry?
I probably would, because I think you've still got the shooting with Nash, and you've got the, you know, if you're doing it, again, it depends what era you're doing. If you're kind of doing 98 to early 2000s, definitely Nash. If you're doing kind of a 2015 to now, the last few years, I would definitely have to take Curry, obviously, because, well, one, Nash isn't in the league, but if it's more recent, then probably Curry. But I think Nash is one of those players that's going to end up being a little bit underrated, because now we're looking at all the point guards who can shoot from 28 feet out and 30 feet out. kind of forget what he did back in the day as more of a traditional point.
Oh man!
I remember when he came into the league, people were saying, "Oh, this guy's a poor man's John Stockton," and of course, John Stockton I'd still rate ahead of Nash, but he is. You know, Steve Nash is Steve Nash. He's a great player in his own right. You know, he's not a poor man's anything. He is a great player.
No. Yeah, exactly. Totally. Yeah, that John Stockton comparison happened a lot. But his offense was flashy. I mean, it was flashy stuff. Mm. And John Stockton's wasn't. You know, it was some pretty impressive pick and roll, that's for sure.
That one-handed pass that Stockton used to do was, you know, when he off the dribble, that one-handed pass, I thought he did really well. That was always flashy. But other than that, yeah, he wasn't exactly, obviously a great point guard and defender and assist man, but I suppose not the flashiest player around. That's not how they got the job done, but yeah.
Yeah, St. John's, my fave. Anyway, if we were to do a story mode of just Australian players, could you give me your starting five?
Starting five, okay. So center would be, you know, this is going to sound blasphemous because obviously Andrew Bogut is an Andrew for a start, and our number one pick.
I'm going to go with Utah. He was at the University of Utah.
And he's now with the Sydney Kings, of course, coming back to the Australia for the NBL. Luke Longley, I have to go with. Starting center of the Bulls, our first player over there drafted and everything, 7th overall pick in 91. Point guard, I will go with Patty Mills. I'll go with Patty Mills.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I was thinking Shane Heal, but then I remembered what Patty Mills did in the 2014 finals in that game 5, just destroying the Heat. And it's has to be Patty. Shooting guard, obviously the great Andrew Gaze, you know, our best player in international competition and certainly our current league. Small forward, I'm going to go with I will go with Ben Simmons. I'll put him at the wing in this situation. Actually, he spent some time in my hometown of Newcastle because his father played for our team, and we had a team. And actually went to high school with one of the best players I ever played against back in high school. Ended up coaching him briefly when he was in the rep league here, Ben Simmons. And power forward, that's a tough one. You know what? I will say Bogut. I'm going to put him at power forward.
Okay. Yeah, awesome.
Unfortunately, that's left Joe Ingles off the list.
I was just going to say that. I was. he's a hero here with the Utah Jazz. He's an absolute hero.
Those 3-point records. I was surprised at that, and I'm perhaps more surprised that it wasn't someone like Hornacek or Stockton that held some of those 3-point records. Actually, who was it that held the record before him?
It had to be Hornacek. No, I don't even think it was.
I thought it was somebody who was more recent.
Yeah, maybe Darren Williams or something. No, I need to look that up. But yeah, that was pretty interesting. But it's just that how the league's changed, probably.
I mean, everyone's just putting up 33s a game, and that's just one player these days.
But no, Joe Ingles is fantastic. Or Exum. Dante Exum. He's Australian, isn't he?
Absolutely had some problems with the injuries, of course. But hopefully going to stay healthy. Yeah, I'm just trying to find that information. I did, because I looked it up and was surprised by who had the record before. I'm just drawing a blank.
Who was that?
Randy Foy, of all players.
Oh, that's right. Randy Foy. He was there for like a year.
2013, one season.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. No, he was a good 3-point shooter. He was really good before he went on to Denver.
It's just what a random player to have the Jazz record. Again, you'd think. You would think a Hornacek. You would think maybe even a Byron Russell, a Jeff Malone. You know, somebody, you know, from back in the day. But no, it's Randy Foy. So, but well, now it's Joe Ingles. So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, that is pretty interesting. But Joe Ingles is such a self-deprecating. He's a funny guy, and he was talking about, they were seeing his response to that. It's like, Donovan Mitchell is going to have it, you know, next year, so I'll just enjoy it while I can. Yeah, I really like Joe Ingles.
That's pretty much the Australian way, I think, that self-deprecating sense of humor. I mean, obviously, so you guys are both big Jazz fans, have been for many years?
Yeah, for sure. We're season ticket holders.
That's awesome, yeah.
No, I am. Yeah. Through my... Yeah.
So if you had to pick a favorite season, would it be the 98 campaign? You know, that close to the title? I mean, those were great years, 97 and 98.
Is this crazy? I was thinking about this, and we watched this great like analysis of that 98 playoff game, and I was looking at the court. There's like a whole bunch of 35-year-olds playing against each other in that finals. You know, have you thought about that?
Like, it's the closer I get to 35, I do think about that, actually. You know, but yeah, it's they're two of the oldest teams in the league. I think maybe the Rockets were older with that year they had Kevin Willis, Akeem Olajuwon, Clyde Drexler, Charles Barkley, so they were pretty old as well. But all the top teams were the old.
They were old. They were old. Yeah, I mean, it was like the Bulls, like as at their oldest, and the Jazz at their oldest. You know, and you look at when they were in their prime. You know, earlier in the 90s, they weren't winning as much. So, I don't know, that year is fascinating to me. But I think the early 90s years were so cool. I loved those earlier 90s. Probably more than the 98.
I'm not sure if you're aware of a podcast run by a fellow Aussie called In All Airness, and Adam runs that. It's a really great podcast. He's actually got a deal with the Retired Players Association, so he's got a lot of great interviews with a lot of old players. He had a great interview with Rick Barry, Dale Ellis, but he had Mark Eaton on. That was a really good one. If you haven't checked that out, that's definitely
worth. Oh, you're kidding.
Listen. Yeah, no, he talked to Mark Eaton about you know his time in, with the Jazz, and yeah, it was a really good interview.
yeah, like Mark Eaton's prime. Holy crap, that was awesome. That was incredible. So
I'm sure you recall the classic highlight where he blocks the shot without jumping, just against the backboard. That's one of my favorite blocks of all time. That is.
Yeah,
it is funny though because I've watched some classic games from now and again, and you watch it on a modern TV and everything, and you think, well, the basketball looks great, but I tell you, this picture looks awful. Like the standard def on the HDTV these days, it's kind of like when you'd see footage from the 70s and the 90s. Like that's how it looks now, 20 years later on again. So it's I'm like, this is, I love the basketball, but this picture this picture's terrible.
oh man, yeah, it's horrendous. It's horrendous. Oh, and then you were watching it on, 20-inch square screens?
Yep.
Like, it's weird to even think about it. Yeah.
It's retro now, isn't it? It's not ugly, it's retro. If that's the one thing we can take away, is that retro aesthetic is something to be enjoyed, which it is, and it's a strong thing, and bringing it back to basketball classics, it really... You look at the historical content in 2K, you look at a lot of the games like Shovel Knight and everything... It seems that we're that generation now that's really wants to tap into that nostalgia from then, and yet do it with these modern ways and the historical content in 2K and what you're doing as well. It's just you talk about 25 years in the making, but it's if ever there was a time to tap into nostalgia, it seems to be now because the internet and everything, and we can really indulge it and forget that we're 30 somethings basically.
It's true. It's a fun time, right? I mean, so much 80s nostalgia. It's a fun time to be alive. It's a fun time to be a child of the 80s.
Yep.
See it all come circling back.
If there's a way that you can incorporate basketball cards into basketball classics, that'd be pretty cool. Just as an aesthetic feature, if not a gameplay mechanic.
Right, yeah, heck yeah. We'll have to think about that.
Could be the unlockable rewards for completing season mode or something. Or completing players. We're just throwing out ideas in this whole session.
Right, right, yeah. Steam achievements are something that we've got cooking right now. Let's see, and there's the Steam trading cards as well, too, that will both kind of scratch that itch. Those will be fun to do.
Is there any chance that we'll see the game on consoles, or is that either through digitally through the store, obviously, or is that bit
we
beyond?
Yeah, totally. We would love that. We think the Switch is really the perfect fit for it. It's got, it comes with the two... You've got the two controllers right there that break off of the screen. The three button gameplay with a D-pad or a stick. I think it's built for local multiplayer. That would be a great fit. But yeah, we'd love to end up on the consoles for sure, as well as mobile. We have builds right now that run great on iOS and Android, and. Once we finish the season mode and once we take the game out of early access, then we'll start to address some of those other markets.
Sounds really good. Just to be able to bring that experience to multi-platforms, obviously, so big, and mobile, I hadn't even thought of. I suppose I was just thinking consoles, but that would be tremendous as well. As we wrap up, question, I guess, that was probably one of the things that I should have thought of in the early stages, I'm especially being the digital broadcaster that I am. Namo Gamo, how did you come up with the name?
Let me think here. I was trying to think of something that was, throw you back to the old old games, and Namco. I liked, you know, Namco, and then I don't know, but there's this like food that Josh, it's like this dessert that you guys make that are called Nanaimo bars. Yeah. Anyway,
it's a Canadian treat. It comes from the city of Nanaimo. Dave just came to me. He's like, "How about this name?" I'm like, "Great, that works."
I mean, that's more creative than the name we have for the show. I mean, we were tossing around names and we came up with NLSC podcast. So, you know, sometimes you're creative, sometimes you're not. But and of course, being creative, and you composed the music as well for the. Because it's a great throwback. You know, everything about the game is a great throwback, but the music as well, you know, really speaks to me, I guess, as far as that retro theme.
Yeah, so I did all the animation, and then I did the rosters, and Josh did all the programming, and he did all the sound design. So I'll have him talk about it.
Yeah, the music, that was a lot of fun for me. I have, you know, quite a bit of experience making music, playing in bands, and I have a degree in music, and so that was, I don't know, that satisfied a niche in me. It was a lot of fun, kind of thinking about, you know, some of these old themes and how do we you know, help drive the feel of the game through the music. You know, there were some of these older games that just used the same looping, you know, 20-second loop of music through the entire game, you know, Tecmo NBA being one of them. And whereas I wanted to approach it more of, you know, how do we increase the intensity as the game goes on? So each quarter has its own music, and that music becomes more intense as the game goes on, you know. And then we have the theme. There ended up being, I think there's about 14 different songs or pieces of music in the game right now, as well as trying to break that up, you know, with, as you've noticed, like when there's a turnover, how the music will change briefly when that happens, to just kind of keep things fresh and keep things moving. So that was a lot of fun for me to just think about the overall sound design of the game.
Absolutely, and you, as you alluded to, just going, that is one of our big memories of old basketball games, certainly, but old video games in general, is that as much as we remember the aesthetic and the gameplay and the levels and that one boss we couldn't beat and all that other stuff, it's the music really just takes us back, and I guess just the same way that the songs that we grew up with, you know, how they remind us of that time. It just, you hear those classic video game themes and level songs and everything like that, and it just immediately takes you back.
Yeah, music's unique that way. It's uniquely a triggering of in the way that it brings up those old emotions and things. It's cool. It's been fun. It's been fun trying to kind of write some themes that, you know, musical themes that felt like they could have maybe come from that era, you know, maybe a little more modern, but things that kind of stick with you, you know. You always remember those classic video game theme songs and stuff.
Well, I think like much of the other games, much of the other aspects of the game, I think you've done a fantastic job of it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I thought, also I had thought, like, I had envisioned kind of like NBA Jam. Well, not just NBA Jam. I mean, if you look at like a lineup, all those 16-bit basketball games, they all kind of had this awkward, a little bit maybe awkward semi-funk, like rap thing going. And and I was glad that Josh went with I don't even know how to explain the feelings that it conjures up, but it's very much like a more classic feel. Not that NBA Jam's soundtrack was bad, but they all kind of sound like that. And so I thought that when we were making a game that was set in that era, I thought maybe we were going to do some sort of...
I know the sound that you're talking about. Yeah, it's very distinctive of that.
Yeah, and I mean, all the basketball games now have gone, you know, pretty well into the hip-hop territory, you know. I mean, it's kind of the culture of the game. And so I thought it would be fun to just do something a little bit different.
It's the NBA 2K19 has just released their soundtrack, actually, and I won't repeat what my regular co-host, Ben Arcane, said about it, but it wasn't flattering when he saw the tracks that were on there. No, not his sound. But so moving back to the NBA very briefly, as we wrap up, obviously big fans. You've got the bright future there with Donovan Mitchell. What any predictions for this season? It looks like it's going to be a wild one. We've got LeBron going to the Lakers. We've got quite a bit of movement going around at the moment. It could be a shift in power. We could see some crazy stuff this season.
Yeah, I'm extremely excited about the Jazz. Like last year was this like renaissance kind of, because Donovan Mitchell is, to me, he's like a once in a long time kind of player, you know, once in a generation kind of guy, at least for our team, that's for sure. And in Utah we have this kind of complex, you know, like, oh, players don't want to be here for whatever reason, you know. But he's made it seem like it's exactly where he wants to be, and he was that way from the beginning. So, you know, that's been cool for the Jazz. And then the fact that they're super good, and you know, Rudy Gobert and the whole team, it's just it's been a blast. And I have super high hopes for next season.
I tell you, Rudy Gobert may have one of the best nicknames in the league with the Eiffel Tower. I mean, we've seen this whole thing with the league where it all becomes everyone's initials plus their jersey number. That's kind of been the
that's thing. It, yeah.
And now to actually have some, you know, you go back to the, you know, Air Jordan and the human highlight film and... My personal favorite, Bob Cousy, the Houdini of the hardwood. I mean, you don't have those creative nicknames anymore. Vince Sanity, of course, of Vince Carter. So to actually have something that's a bit clever like that is cool. And he is obviously a fantastic player, just a monster in the middle.
Oh my gosh. Yes, Gobert. And the French Connection. I've heard that. But I think they're trying to get the French Connection to like stick somehow, you know, but he's just not quite good enough at the pick and roll yet. But that would be cool if, you know, maybe if Karl Malone was French or something like that, the French Connection.
Kenny, but, our other co-host, has tried to get Jingles to stick for Joe Ingles. much to Joe Ingles' chagrin, apparently, when he was yelling at him during a game here. But, Jingles all the way, something like that is...
Yeah, or Slow Mo Joe. I mean, there's no way he likes that.
No.
Slow Mo Joe.
It's okay if he's being self-deprecating, but when it's coming from someone else, that's when we take exception.
But no, I've seen some pretty optimistic forecasts for the Jazz being at like second in the West, even over the Rockets. Sometimes, I mean, that would be incredible. But they're definitely in a good spot. And I think the whole Carmelo thing, to see what happens with Carmelo in the mix there, because they're kind of basketball, you know, the Houston's basketball might fit Carmelo better than OKC. I don't know. So I think that's a big question mark for me, Houston. The Lakers, I don't even have a... I'm probably way off, but I don't have like super high hopes for them. I don't think they'll be, you know, top four even in the West.
I mean, people are talking about them with LeBron. They're obviously going to have a big impact, but people are talking about them winning the championship and everything. And I'm like, ooh, that's I still have a tough time picking against the Warriors, let alone you know, the Lakers, who coming out of the lottery and everything. But it's I mean, it's a tough conference, the West, right now. So I mean, that's a big call to say that they're going all the way out of the West.
Dude, I couldn't believe that Paul George stayed in Oklahoma. Like, that was a big shock to me.
Yeah, it seemed like he was on the way out. I guess they made the pitch to him that he felt appreciated there. But
yeah. No, it should be interesting. And then Cousins. I mean, the Cousins thing was bizarre. It's been interesting. The Warriors, though. I mean, it would be a colossal surprise if they don't win it.
Seems definitely a dynasty there in California right now.
Which
I'm not that fond of. I mean, the thing is, this is probably how everyone else felt about the Bulls in the 90s, and now I'm on the other end of it, so I'm just getting my getting my own back. Like, they're getting their own back on me, I suppose, these days. Now I look like the hater. But,
well, hey, the Bulls were going before the 90s. I mean, you know, even with the Bad Boy Pistons, the Bulls were right up there. And then through the whole 90s, they just owned it. But no, people still love them, obviously. I mean, they've got to be, like, the most adored.
They're definitely up there. They had that rock star feeling, I suppose, with you know, they certainly drew when they were on the road, if nothing else.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. My brother would root for the Bulls when, you know, like, we're these huge Utah Jazz fans, and well, Michael Jordan's like a swear word. It was. He might have just been stirring the pot. I don't know. He had, like, Jordan hats, and he had all these Jordan posters. He liked Space Jam. You know,
I'm like, nobody likes Space Jam. Come on.
I like Space Jam. But I mean that's what they're talking about, remaking it or doing a sequel. I mean, you don't mess with a classic. Do we really need, you know? Would you remake Casablanca? I think not. You know, it's what it comes down to. But I mean, the whole joke is, if it's LeBron, is he going to join the Monstars? You know, or just
oh god, I don't. Yeah. Yeah,
it may be the Bart versus Space Mutants of movies that I love it, but I can't defend it.
Right.
So it's been great talking to you guys today about basketball classics. It is, as I say, a fantastic idea. It's coming along really well. Loving to see it being successful. It's available right now in early access. You've also got some merch as well. You've got some t-shirts.
Yeah, that's been fun. Dave put those together and threw them up there for people to start checking out. We haven't talked about them much, but they turned out great. You know, I've bought 9 of them, I think. but yeah, that's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But we'll definitely have to get some more people into playing the game. Before we wrap up, is there anything else about the game that you want to tell us? Anything else? You know, this is the game we love to get people to play it. So if there's any more info that you can drop at the moment, you know, by all means, the mic is yours.
Yeah. Well, I would just say we really like the constructive criticism, and, you know, really appreciate what you've said and what a lot of people said. We really, really, truly. Because we're such a small studio, you know, we absolutely need that feedback to make it good. And we want it to be good. You know, we've spent a lot of time on it. We're not under the gun of some publisher. You know, we're not beholden to people. We want to make a game that you can keep going back to, the way that we keep going back to our favorite, retro games. Anyway, also if you want to throw it out to some listeners or anything, I've also made these boxes, these game boxes and manuals that if someone wants to write in with some ideas for how to improve the game, I'd be happy to send off some prizes.
Sounds good. We'll let people know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to leave a shout out for Razer, you know, for bringing it to your attention, and he's done a lot for us in spreading awareness of the game, and so yeah, thanks to Razer. He was also one of the first. I think there were only like four people who ever beat the Phantom 5 on the original build of the game, where they were nigh impossible to beat. So. Well done, Razer.
Absolutely. Shout out to our contributor, Razer. Many great contributions to our community over the years, and for bringing that to my attention. It's as I say, I'm very excited about the project and looking forward to giving you guys more feedback, and hopefully can play a small role in that. And if you ever want to add an NLSC team as a boss team or something, I can send along some assets. So,
oh, please do. Please do. We absolutely will. We absolutely want to do that. You pass that along.
Heard it here first. So, Josh, Dave, thank you so much for joining the NLSC podcast and telling us about this great game. It is available on Steam through Early Access. So, by all means, guys, girls, check it out.
Thanks a million.
Thanks, Andrew.
Definitely a lot of fun talking to Josh and Dave about Basketball Classics. Once again, it is available on Steam through Early Access. You can check it out. We have a thread in the forum where you can discuss it. Feel free to leave your thoughts in the comment section below. You can get them on Twitter at Namo_Gamo, Namo_Gamo. And yeah, check out the game and stay tuned for more coverage on the NLSC. But yes, that is all for this week. Thank you once again for tuning in. As I said at the top of the show, we will be back next week with NBA Live 19 and NBA 2K19 impressions. Please join us in the forum to share your thoughts on the game in the meantime. Look out for all our original content. As far as the NLSC podcast is concerned, if you enjoyed the show, and we certainly hope you do each and every week, you can subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also find us on various podcatching apps such as Podcast Addict and the Stitcher app. Search for NLSC Podcast, look for our logo, that will be us. Or keep streaming on the NLSC itself. As long as you're tuning in and enjoying the show, that is the main thing. You can also connect with us on social media. We're on Twitter, at the NLSC. On Facebook, facebook.com/the NLSC. We're on Instagram, NLSC Basketball. And of course, keep it locked to NLSC itself, NBA-live.com, for everything we do for basketball video games. But yes, that is it for episode number 262 of the NLSC podcast. Thank you once again for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Andrew. Let's enjoy some great times on the virtual hardwood.